The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We have a lot to cover today. The GOP decided yesterday not to pass the health care bill that they put together in 2015. They voted on it yesterday, but nobody was really paying attention because Donald Trump tweeted, "No more transgender in the military." I would like to say this was some plan to, you know, as misdirection, so you're not watching the other hand, but I don't think this is. This was ham-fisted, poorly done, and the ramifications to the Pentagon are enormous on both sides of the issue. I'm going to talk straight, common sense, based in fact. We do that right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. All right. Let me give you an update on what happened yesterday. Yesterday, around this time, Donald Trump tweeted these tweets. "After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised the United States government will not accept nor allow transgendered individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical cost and disruption that transgendered in the military would entail. Thank you." All right. At first blush, I want to say I agree with the president on this. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with tremendous medical cost and disruptions that, and I just take out transgender and put that anyone in the military would entail. So, on the forefront, I want you to know, I am not for anything that disrupts the military. With that being said, let's start with this disruption. Those tweets, this policy, shocked the Pentagon. The Pentagon didn't know the president was going to say these things. The Pentagon wasn't there. They were shocked. In fact, the Secretary of Defense was on vacation. Why did this happen? Why did he make this? Well, Politico reported last night the House Republicans were planning on passing a spending bill stacked with his campaign promises, including money to build the border wall with Mexico. But an internal House Republican fight over transgendered troops was threatening to blow up the entire bill. So what happened? The internal fighting between the frickin' GOP. Let me just say this. Defund the GOP. The internal fighting is what made Donald Trump say, "I'm just going to say this and tweet this out and hope to get that bill passed." Trump's sudden decision was in part a last-ditch attempt to save the House proposal, full of his campaign promises, that was on the verge of defeat, numerous congressional and White House sources said. Okay. So, to get something else done, he causes disruptions in the military. The military has been studying this, and they asked for more time. They asked for everything, any decision, to be delayed until, I think it's January 1st, 2018. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't hate anybody. I don't care. What you do is your business. What surgeries you want to have, your business. How you identify, your business. But the military is in a special class. It cannot be disrupted from excellence. It cannot be a place where anyone gets special favors. If you saw the movie Hacksaw Ridge, they were brutal to this kid because he's going to get us all killed because he is somebody who won't pick up a gun. Okay, well, that didn't turn out to be the case, did it? But he wasn't given any special favors. What he was promised was what everyone is promised. If you're a conscientious objector, we'll send you to the front lines. We don't recommend it. We think you should leave because there are people with guns. And we can't count on you, so everybody in the team, don't count on that guy to save your life, because he ain't going to. Okay? Promised in the Constitution. But you have to hit all of the standards. So let me go through this point by point. First, yesterday it was announced that we have 4,000 transgender people in the military. I don't think that number is true. But let me play this both ways. Just think this through logically. That comes from the RAND Corporation. And what the RAND Corporation did was just take the general population and then say, this is how many we have in the general population percentage-wise. Let's just put that against the military. So that would mean if it's exactly the same in the military as it is in the general population, there would be 4,000 people serving. We do know that once this transgendered thing came out from President Obama, the military, you were open to come out and say, I'm transgendered. Only 10 people raised their hands in the entire U.S. military and said, I'm transgendered. Now, I don't care if it's 4,000 or 10. What does that tell you? That tells you that transgendered people have been serving in our military and they haven't caused a disruption. Because did you know we had any transgendered people in the military? I mean, it's not something I ever thought of. It's kind of like, you know, the way I was with gay people in the military. I don't know. Of course there were gay people in the military. There's gay people have been, you know, presidents, kings, villains, great guys, you know, fighting in the opposition military and fighting in ours forever. Of course there were gay people in the military. And as long as they're not causing any disruption to the actual job of the military, and I say that about anybody, as long as your faith, if there were a group of Mormons that were like, you know what, but I cannot fight on Sunday, okay, you're out, dude, because there's going to be fighting on Sundays. So there are 10 people that we know of, and they had to self-identify. So as long as you can do the job, I'm good. And I think every fair-minded American is that way. As long as you can do the job, I'm okay. As long as you are not asking for any special exemptions or special favors, I am good. Next point, point number one. There are people already doing it. We only know of 10. Don't believe the numbers. It might be more than 10. But it's not more than 4,000. Two, I looked up elective surgeries that are given to vets and soldiers. Elective surgeries are not covered by the VA. Life-saving surgeries are, for instance, liposuction. Liposuction is not covered by the VA unless it will save your life. Then the VA covers it, and you'll get liposuction. But not for everybody who says, I'm a little fat. So is this a life-saving elective surgery? No. In fact, the research shows exactly split at best when it comes to suicide rate. This is gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria means you feel and think one way or the other. Okay, where does that end in the first place? In Canada, they are currently dealing with another dysphoria, and that is capable and handicapped dysphoria. People are going into hospitals now and saying, and while I can be allowed to say this, I'm going to, it's sick. They are going in and they're saying, I don't feel fully capable. I have always identified as a person who is handicapped, who only has one leg. And they are asking doctors to take off a leg because they identify as a handicapped person. Any doctor that would perform that is insane and needs to lose their license. When it comes to gender dysphoria, okay, is it life-saving? Meaning, if you want to do that, you can pay for it and on your own time, unless it's life-saving. I'm not giving people liposuction. I'm not giving them plastic surgery. But if it's life-saving, okay. Let's look at life-saving. 46% is the suicide rate for those with gender dysphoria. 46%. So anybody, A, who doesn't have empathy and compassion for those people who are struggling with gender dysphoria, God help you. 46%. Now, those who have the surgery, what is their suicide rate? The most positive suicide rate study that I can find shows that it is 46% of those who have gender dysphoria commit suicide. Those who then go on and have the surgery, 45% of those commit suicide. It's flat. It is not a life-saving treatment. Okay. So, elective surgery for life-saving treatment. When you look at the younger demographics, people who are 18 or below, people who are in their 20s and have this surgery, those numbers begin to shift, and the suicide rate for those who have had the surgery actually goes up. So you could make the case that this surgery is not life-saving. In some groups, it actually kills you faster. 3. Can you meet the standards? As long as you can meet the standards, I don't care. And I don't think any American cares. But you got to climb that wall. You got to carry that pack. You have to be able to protect your brothers in arms. It's not just your life. It is all of our lives and the future of our country and our children. Anything the government does, it should be the military should be the last place culture changes, unless it is a rape culture, unless there is actual abuse going on and damage going on because of the culture. When it comes to new ideas in the culture, new experiments in the culture, the military should be exempt from all of that. The only question is, can you perform the duty? My dad wanted to be in the Marines really, really bad. He wasn't welcome. My dad somehow slipped past the doctors with his flat feet. But my dad stood on a marble floor in our bakery. It had these old marble floors. Our bakery used to be the lobby of an old hotel. And they converted it into a bakery. And then we bought it. My father walked on marble floors his whole life. That man stood all day long, making cakes and pastries and everything else. And his feet hurt. He got past the screening process to get into the military. Unfortunately, the standing, he said that they had to do something. This is the way I remember the story as a kid. But the story I know is they did something where they had to stand on one foot for a while and then another foot. And he could not do it. And he was ejected. Nowhere, at no time, have I ever heard that story in my family on that damn military. My dad said they had standards. I couldn't meet them. And it was one of the biggest disappointments of my life. Hit the standard and everyone is welcome. Miss the standard and I don't care who you are, you're out. Politically, knock it off. GOP, Donald Trump, DNC, knock it off. These people work their ass off and put their lives on the line more than me or anyone in the general population, and certainly more than you politicians. They make much less money. We give them the absolute worst medical care. After they have fought and died for us, they're dying in line at our stupid socialized medicine VA hospitals. Knock it off. Let the military make the military decisions, period. You want a bill passed? Get off your fat ass and go to Capitol Hill and actually get them to pass the bill on its merits. Do not use our military as a pawn or a token, period. Now this, our sponsor this half hour is Delta Defense. You have a right to safeguard your life. Few more fundamental rights in America are this important. Protecting yourself, protecting your family. The USCCA knows that there are two kinds of bad guys. One comes into your house at night and tries to take things from you, from your children to your life to your TV set. And you have a right to protect yourself and your family. But there's another kind of bad guy, and that guy comes dressed as an attorney. The minute you have protected yourself, the attorneys will do everything they can because they're trying to make a constitutional point and trying to hurt the Second Amendment. They'll make your life a living hell if you've ever had to defend yourself. You need somebody in your corner. Who's going to pay those bills? Who's going to counsel? Who's going to represent you? The USCCA. I want you to go there and find their affordable protection that every gun owner should have. Also, you can get registered for their Great American Giveaway, $1,776 for gun and ammo. Five lucky winners going to get $1,776 to buy the ammo or the gun of their choice. Go to protectanddefend.com. Lock in your five chances to win, but time is limited, so go to protectanddefend.com. That's protectanddefend.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
So here's a problem. Can you have the government pay for your surgery? For instance, liposuction. Okay, that is a surgery that Americans pay for. That is covered, okay, but only if it is life-saving. We're talking about medical procedures, not drugs, but medical procedures. You cannot get liposuction while you're currently serving because you wouldn't be able to. If it was a life-saving procedure for you, you'd be too fat to wear the uniform and to walk around. Now, maybe that changes as you go up in rank. I don't know. But that's where I'm comparing this. If it's a life-saving procedure, okay. If it's a elective surgery, you have to pay for it. And until this surgery is shown that it is life-saving, I don't know. And then on top of it, Can you go through that while you're currently serving? Have we done any studies on that? That's like liposuction. If you're fat, you're ejected, get thin, and then come back. Deal with your issues and then serve.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, so let's talk about surgeries. What you're dealing with in the government and what we're dealing with the military and elective surgeries and then also in the general population, I want you to understand what is coming your way. Before I tell you this, because it's bad news, before I tell you this, on tomorrow's program, and I believe it's at this time tomorrow, right? It's either hour number one or hour number two. We have the CEO of a new kind of insurance that will help a lot of people. It was a carve out in Obamacare. And at this time tomorrow, if you are paying exorbitant rates, if you are having problems with insurance, listen tomorrow at this time. We may have an answer for you. Now, let me tell you what we're headed toward. This is from the NHS. Now, this was from last year. The British NHS, the National Health Service, this is what we're headed for, a single-payer system. This is what the VA is, and this is why the VA is so bad. The socialized healthcare system, now said that in May of last year, they spent $3.26 billion more than they actually had. That's hospitals, clinics, and doctors. $3.26 billion. So if you think you can buy the lie that this is going to save everybody money, you're fooling yourself. This is not an answer. This is another prescription for the death of our country, because it's all just going to be added to our bill. Please remind your congressmen and senators that that bill will not go away. If we don't pay the Chinese their money back, if we don't pay people their money back, all they will do is claim our land and our resources. They will get their money back. In North Yorkshire, hospital leaders have decided now to cut back and not provide hip or knee surgeries to smokers or those with body mass indices above 30. So if you're 5'10 and have a BMI of 30, that means you weigh 209 pounds. If you're 5'5",
wow,
5'5", and you weigh 180 pounds, you are not allowed to have surgery. Why are they
in
doing
England.
This? Yes, in England.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this. Major surgeries pose high risks for severely overweight patients and those who smoke. Is somebody who is 5'5 and 180 pounds severely overweight? Who's defining severely overweight? The NHS has, for decades, had a waiting list. Let me tell you what's happening, and this is before it really begins to collapse. NHS doctors routinely, this is all backed up with facts, this is from Forbes magazine. NHS doctors routinely conceal from patients information about innovative new therapies that the NHS does not pay for as to not distress, upset, or confuse them. Does Charlie Gard come to mind? Terminally ill patients are now classified as, quote, close to death, so the NHS does not have to provide any kind of life support or end of life benefits.
Wouldn't this be the very definition of death panels?
Yes, it is. It is. It's just the beginning. When you're saying,
what?
If you are having hip surgery and you smoke or you are horribly overweight, all they have to do is just, if you think there's going to be like, oh, well, that 180, scientifically, that was the number. No, the only number that they care about is 3.26 billion. That's it. So if everybody got their weight under 30 of the BMI, they will reduce it and say only those who have a BMI of 25. NHS expert guidelines on the management of high cholesterol are intentionally out of date, putting patients at serious risk to save the NHS money. When the government approved an innovative new treatment for elderly blindness, the NHS initially decided to reimburse for the treatment only after the patients were blind in one eye, and reclassifying blindness as someone who didn't have sight in both eyes. While most NHS patients expect to wait 5 months for a hip operation or knee surgery, leaving them immobile or disabled, the actual waiting list, so you got your BMI under 30. Now you're put on a waiting list. You have 11 months to wait for a hip, 12 months to wait for a knee. That compares in the United States to this broken, awful system of 3 to 4 weeks for both hips and knees. One in four Britons with cancer are denied treatment with the latest drugs proven to extend their life. One in four. Those who seek to pay for such drugs on their own are expelled from the system for making the government look bad. They're forced to pay for the entirety of the rest, for the rest of their lives, of all costs. So you can't say, okay, well, I'll pay for that. You guys just pay for what's covered. If you say, I'm going to pay for this drug myself, you are then spit out of the system and you must pay every dime for everything you do for the rest of your life. Britons diagnosed with cancer and heart attacks are more likely to die and more quickly than those in other developed nations. Britain's survival rates for heart disease and cancer are little better than former communist countries. That's where we're headed, gang. So what did Congress do yesterday? They didn't call for a full repeal of this socialized medicine that we're headed towards. This is what we're going to get, because the system that we have under the ACA does not work. Okay, so what do we do? Common sense would tell us, let's super serve the people that we have. You're between jobs and you have no insurance and your company has gone out of business, so there is no COBRA. Okay, let's make it easy to get onto Medicare or Medicaid right now so you can get into the system and have that bridge of 4 or 5 months while you're unemployed. The minute you're employed and your healthcare system kicks in, you're out. Why is it so hard to do that? If you have a pre-existing condition and no one will cover this, then you can get on to Medicare or Medicaid and you can get that treatment that you need. Not experimental, because we can't afford it. But we must be able to do experiments. We must be able to develop new medicines. And the only way to do that is with a free market. There's no new medicines for cancer coming out of Great Britain because they won't pay for them. If we go to a single payer system, you won't pay for experimental treatments because there will be no one to pay for it. We know that there are people that are clogging up. Nobody's dying on the streets here. We know that there are people that are clogging up the hospitals, the ERs, because they're using those as clinics. Good. Let's get them Medicare coverage, not at the hospitals unless it's an emergency, but instead at an urgent care center, at a clinic in our towns. Let's get that done and provide them clean, good, basic care. These problems are really easy, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to make themselves rich, they're trying to make themselves powerful, and they're trying to fix problems that don't exist. And by doing that, what they're doing is they're causing more problems, and they're causing your premiums to go up. They're causing your deductible to be absolutely outrageous. Let's see, I can pay $1,500, and then I can pay that every month, and then if I spend more than $10,000, then it'll kick in. So I've got to pay $1,500 a month plus the $10,000 of medical cost. I don't have the money to go take my kid to go have an ear infection treated because I'm spending it on the $1,500 a month for in case they have cancer or a broken leg. And I don't even know if a broken leg would fit into that at $10,000 if I haven't spent anything. It's almost like kids. I need everybody to break an arm January 1st. We're all going to the hospital. I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. There is a solution. Tomorrow on this program, we're going to show you somebody who has started a company for a carve-out, and it might help save your family a lot of money, and we'll do that on tomorrow's program. In 15 minutes, I'm going to give you another solution, one that the politicians won't like, but it's high time we make up our mind. Also, at the end of the program, the last hour, is the author of Friction. This is an incredible book that I think can be applied not just in business, but all over. But if you are a business person, you are a manager, you own your own company, you are running your own family, I want you to read this book, Friction. The author is on with us in hour number three. I had dinner with him last night. He is fascinating. And I think we'll really be able to help you out, especially if you run a business or manage a business. All coming up right now, Simply Safe. Burglars love this time of year because you're gone on vacation. You're at an amusement park with the kids. You know that burglars usually don't come at night, and especially in Texas, because they know usually somebody has a gun at home. They don't want to run into you. Just like you don't want to run into them, they are not looking for an encounter with you. If somebody comes into your house at night, they either don't know that you're home or they have much worse intent than just stealing something. So they love it. You go on vacation or you go take the kids out to the amusement park. That's when your home is empty and it's most vulnerable during the day. Simply Safe is having their biggest ever summer sale. Right now, take $100 off their special summer package. The biggest ever summer sale has everything you need to protect your home. An arsenal of security sensors to secure every door and every window. Everything that you need. And then, no contract. You own it. No wiring. Nobody's coming into your house. There's no salespeople to upsell you. Well, yeah, we were running that special, but you're completely different. Yeah, right. You control your life and no contract, and it's $14.95 a month for the 24/7 professional monitoring. $14.99, and they'll call the police for you, and no contract. So you can't afford the $14.99 this month? Cancel. Pick it up next month. Do it just in the summer. Do it however you want. $14.99 a month for the monitoring, and $100 off right now the system, which is incredibly affordable. The sale ends at the end of this month, July 31st. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Save your $100 now. Get the great system for an unbelievable price at simplysafebeck.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. I'm so glad you're here. Let's look at, is there anything fun to, you know, talk about here in the remaining minutes of this hour?
No, there's not anything fun at all. Oh. I was looking at this weight chart that's got healthy weight, overweight, and obese for BMI. And, you know, the lowest weight I've ever been in my life. The lowest weight. I'm still overweight.
What was the lowest weight? How tall are you?
6'2", 6'1".
So what was the lowest weight you've ever been at?
200.
200. That's the lowest weight.
Yeah, is that when you were born?
Yes, that's my birthweight.
So
you should
have
been born at overweight. That's correct.
200. and you were a football player.
I was.
Okay, so at 200.
But I wasn't that weight when I was playing football.
Okay.
At 200 pounds, that was with the help of...
cocaine?
That was part of it.
Okay. So what does it say you should be? 160?
No, that's right around... 180, 186, 190. Right,
okay, so I'm... okay, because my lowest weight was 180, and that's when I was a kid, and I looked like a stick.
And they say that's you're healthy.
Yeah. When I was on CNN and then after I left Fox, my weight was 205. And every time people met me in person, they were like, good God, man, have a sandwich.
I mean, we have several pictures of you during the CNN days, pre-CNN headline news days.
Yeah, and it was rail thin. And everybody would say, you're not losing any more weight because are you sick?
That's when you believed that because you were on TV, you needed to be thin.
Yeah, I know. I've so long since lost that. But here's the thing. That's at 205. 180 to 190 is where I'm, quote, healthy.
Right.
I don't know how you have any muscle mass at 180 and 6'2". I mean, that's crazy. But this is the beginning of the rationing. Again, in Britain, you're 5'5 and 180 pounds. You ain't getting surgery because you're obese.
Right.
And we can't afford you because you may not make it.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. So glad that you're here today. I want to start on what's happening in the Senate with Obamacare. And I don't care about the players. I don't care who's on board, who's not on board. I don't care about any of that because that doesn't affect my life and I don't think it affects yours. What they're doing or failing to do actually does affect your life. So what do we do besides just look at this information rolling out in the news and get pissed off about it? We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So here's the headline today. Trump urges the GOP senators to pass skinny Obamacare repeal bill. What does this mean? This means that they have tried for several times to pass any kind of health care reform, and they can't get anybody to agree on it. And so now they're saying, okay, let's just repeal just a couple of parts of it. And today is the day. This morning, President Obama tweeted to the GOP.
Is he still president or did he come back?
Yeah.
I may have missed a headline.
He's still president. Here it is. No.
President, you said President Obama.
Oh, I'm sorry. President Trump.
Yeah.
Senate Republicans begin their final push today to unravel. This is a 7-year offensive. Emphasis on the word offensive that takes all kinds of meaning in this story. They hope that a pared-down skinny bill, which will repeal several Obamacare provisions, can gain enough support. several times they have voted this week. Senate yesterday rejected 45-55, a straight repeal of Obamacare with a two-year delay in implementation to allow Congress to work out a replacement. That is what they promised in 2015. Seven Republicans opposed the measure, which was going to be pushed by party leadership. Trump sent this out today. Come on, Republican senators. You can do it. You can make a move on health care. After 7 years, this is your chance to shine. Don't let the American people down. What is he saying there? I'm gonna explain this through a personal story. Nobody in Washington seems to be working for us. Nobody is actually engaged working for you, the one that they asked you to not only vote, but they asked you to go and convince your friends. They got you so wrapped up in it, no matter which side you're on, that you have lost friends and in some cases family members. You have done so much work and carried so much water because you truly believed that this group of people, whichever side, that these people would do everything they can, because they asked you, do everything you can. I want you to go get friends. I want you to drive people to the election. I want you to talk to people. I want you to convince them. And people did, to the point where we can't even talk to each other anymore. None of them are working for you. And what's happening in Washington, D.C. right now is a prime example. And no one is holding them accountable. There is no accountability. So let me tell you my story. A few years ago, I started The Blaze. And without getting into all the details, I knew we had a problem when the leader of the company said to me in a phone conversation, I said, you're just going after clicks. You're just trying to drive ratings. I don't understand that. That's not what we stand for. What are our principles? And I was told, Glenn, quote, nobody gives an F about your effing principles. And I paused and I said, you realize who you just said that to? Yes. I knew at that point my company was beyond repair. But I hoped. So what I did is I tried to clean house with as little as I could, but it was pretty infested. And I don't mean just with people. I mean with policies and riddled with debt and everything else. I should have shut it down and started over. But people entrusted me, and I had failed them. And I wasn't going to fail. So I went and I looked for strong people in our own staff that could help. A year later, I have a meeting with one of the new executives. And I had a meeting for about an hour on a project that I thought we should do. But I wasn't running the company. I was only one of the voices in the company that, as an investor, let me advise you where I think we should go. And as self-imposed, that's what I self-imposed on the company. So everybody sat in this meeting and said, that's fantastic. Great. Let's do that. They left my office and a brand new employee heard this other employee say, he went to him and said, okay, let's get together because you and I are going to have to work closely on this to get this done. And the one employee said to the new employee, what are you talking about? We're not going to do any of that stuff. It took one brave new employee to tell me that. And after a long time of fighting this and not believing that I was smart enough to fix it or powerful enough to fix it, I was at the point of giving up. Then the election came, and I was, quite honestly, just as mad at you as you were at me. I didn't understand you. You didn't understand me. And I think we just missed each other in language. And I'm trying to repair that now, to really, truly go back and do the things that I should have asked. And that is, come on, you're a good friend of mine. This is not normal behavior for you. What the hell is happening in your life? And I would have seen your pain, and things would have been different. About 8 months ago, my wife said, I've had it. Shut it down, honey. It's going to kill you or wipe us out or whatever. Just shut it down. It's not worth it. I said no because, again, I have partners who rely on me. I have employees who rely on me. And most importantly, I started thinking about the vision that was entrusted with me. You know me if you listen to my show. I could be delusional, sure, but I do believe that we're all here for a reason, and I was given this vision of to create something for a reason. And I'm not going to give up on it. And so, instead, I didn't give up. I said, honestly, it's my fault. I wasn't running the company. I had nothing to do with other than I was a big investor and I was the founder and would make suggestions, but that was all self-imposed. I could have. What crazy idea did I have that the guy who had the vision, the guy who had the most passion more than anybody else, would self-impose and restrict himself from actually being holding people accountable for it? That's just stupid. Because I could hire the best people, but unless they had the vision, unless they had the passion, they were not going to create what I was looking for. I'm the one who has the vision. I'm the one who believes in it. It's my responsibility in the first and the last place. Blame others? No. Hold people accountable? Yes. But I need to take charge of my stewardship. So I was faced with, do I pull the ripcord? Do I eject or not? This is the point of the story that will take you now to Washington. I pulled the ripcord, but not the one that the rest of the world will tell you you can pull. Just give up. I pulled the ripcord, the one that stops everything and says, stop. I'm not playing this game anymore. I'm changing the rules to common sense rules. I'm the owner of this place. It's my vision. It's mostly my money and it's my life. And you know what? I found that this company is full of people who worked here because they have a piece of that vision, and they're passionate about that vision. And they have been waiting for me to step up and say, we're going here. They're here because they too believe. And so the last few weeks or couple of months, I've been asking them, you got to help me. If you believe, you got to help me. Here's where we're going. Here's the point on the horizon. Refocus, teach, and empower. Now, I don't know. We may not make the turn. We might. I think we are. I think we're going to change everything again. And we're not going to get there for a while. It's going to be hard. But in the meantime, I can make a few small movements in the right direction. And then perhaps others will go, well, I see what they're going for. I see where they're headed. And they'll help us. How does this relate to healthcare? Let me reread the tweet here. GOP on healthcare. After 7 years, this is your chance to shine. Don't let the American people down. Mr. President, take responsibility. You have been for any and all of these bills. You were elected because you are the deal maker. You're the guy who said you could bring everyone together. You haven't even, it seems, tried to bring all of your party behind you. Because we as the American people don't feel you have a passion for this deal or that deal. You have a passion for any deal. That doesn't work. This is your chance to shine, Mr. President. This is your chance to bring the GOP together. Not to point fingers and say it's just the GOP, because that doesn't help. Sorry, I don't want to make this about the president, because this isn't about the president. Just like my company isn't about people who used to work here or anything else. It's about today and what can I do. Nobody is being held responsible or accountable in our country. Those guys go to Washington, they tell you anything, and then we never fire them. They are the ones who listen to us in our town halls, and then they go out into the hallway, and somebody who's new in Washington and sincere says to the older guy, hey, so we should meet on this. And the other guy says, what are you talking about? We're not going to do any of that crap. That is Mitch McConnell. That is Paul Ryan. That is a majority of the DNC and the RNC. They will tell you whatever they have to tell you so you stop looking at them. And then when the crap hits the fan, they blame it on someone else. So how are we going to fix this? There's one answer. This is your country. This is your money. This is your life. This is your future. This is your children's future. There is one cord that you can pull to eject out of this, and it is called Article 5. It's in the Constitution. It is the last resort given to the people, because the founders knew this was going to happen, because they didn't talk about the better angels. If we were surrounded by better angels, we wouldn't need the Constitution. The Constitution is not a restraint on you, the people. It's a restraint on those people that have power, because the founders knew every single time power corrupts. And so at the end of the Constitutional Convention, they said, you know what? We haven't given the people. We've given it to the states. But what happens if the states go bad? We haven't given it to the people. And they wrote in Article 5, which allows the people to stand up and say, enough. You're not doing our work. We're going to put term limits on you. We're going to put spending limits on you. Because you'll never do it. And these things have to be done. You get involved in, first, defund the GOP and the DNC. Don't give those people another dime. They're using you. Second, start listening to common sense. Start looking at the whole picture, not just the picture given to you by the people who are making you feel good. You need the truth. So look for the truth and then get involved in the Article 5 Constitutional Convention movement. Just Google search Article 5. Find out how you can get involved and get this moving. Because it was given to you, the way out, but more importantly, it was given to you the responsibility. You believe in the vision. They don't. You own this. You have the vision. How can you possibly give that vision and responsibility to guard that vision to somebody who doesn't actually believe in the vision? It will never work. It must be done by you. Get involved now and get Article 5 enacted and call for a constitutional convention. Those of us who actually believe and know that America is good and deserves better than this, get involved now. Our sponsor this half hour is My Patriot Supply. North Korea could have a reliable nuclear capability in an ICBM as early as next year. That's coming from the Pentagon. That's 2 years ahead of schedule. You can save $100 now with My Patriot Supply on your survival food kit. Now, that's not saying that we're all going to be nuked and we're going to... What do we do if North Korea starts to make a move? What do we do? Do we go to war? That is a global war. Do you remember hearing the story from your parents or your grandparents about what World War II was like and living through World War II? They made it because they canned their own food. They made it because they had extra on hand because suddenly everything became tight. And I don't mean the tight like we have. I mean, you don't have money for new shoes type. Prepare yourself now. People do not rise to the occasion. They rise to the level of their preparedness and their knowledge and education. Call 800-946-2325. Order online at preparewithglenn.com. Right now, you'll save $100 on their new survival food kit, 450 servings of breakfast, lunch, and dinner, snacks, drinks for $447. It's $100 off. 800-946-2325. Order online with preparewithglenn.com. 800-946-2325. Preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I think that we need a song on that. Yeah, it's catchy. He's the guy that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was using as the top IT staffer. There is something really bad going on here, and this goes to absolute total corruption. He is a guy who wired $283,000 to Pakistan before he tried to leave the country. He was leaving the country with $12,000 in cash. He destroyed the hard drives. Now, here's who this guy was. He was in charge of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and I think other hard drives in the Capitol. And he and his family, they were charging like four times the amount they should have charged. And he had taken email from senators and rerouted the traffic. So he was able to get all senators' traffic on their email servers to a hard drive off-site that he kept without anybody knowing it. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC protected this guy relentlessly. Why? More in a minute.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
So, Imran Iran. Oh. I can't say it except in the song. I'm on a run. This is the guy that was working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. The media is not covering this, which tells you something is really wrong. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has obstructed investigations on this guy from the get-go. It is astounding what this guy has made in the past. He was being paid $2 million.
He was her IT guy.
The IT guy.
Yeah, how many IT guys are making, is it 2 million?
Yeah,
$2 million a year.
His whole family, between his wife, his brothers, and him, they were paid $5 million by the house.
Wow.
Your money... $5 million were paid to his family who is doing IT support. If it's costing us $5 million to do IT support in the nation's capital for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democrats, that's a problem. That is a big problem when it's all going to one family. Now, here's a couple of things that are really disturbing about this guy. So far, he's only being charged with bank fraud. And the reason why is because he went to the House Credit Union and said, I want to take out a loan on my house. And he applied for this loan. I think got the loan of $300,000 or $287,000, but it's a home he was renting. He didn't own it. You know, how are these people going to fix the banks if their own house credit union is doing that? So they gave him the loan. He then tried to transfer the money to Pakistan. Okay, nothing here about Islam. There's nothing here about Islam. Don't jump to any conclusions because of Islam, because of Pakistan. All we know right now is this guy was at least a total fraud. And he was trying to leave the country once they were on to him. Now, why? Why did Debbie Wasserman Schultz, every time somebody brought him up, she quashed it? There was an investigation. She raised holy hell. A company came in and did an analysis and said, we can do the same service for a quarter of the price. Why are you paying $5 million to this family? We can do better at a quarter of a price. She kicked them out. Anyone who ever said anything about him or his family, they found themselves fired. We know that he smashed all of his hard drives. We also have heard that he had gone into some or all, we don't know, of the House and the Senate computers, gotten the emails, and any email that the senators were writing and the House members were writing were going to off-site servers and a hard drive owned by him. Is it possible he was blackmailing? Is it possible he was blackmailing Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC, House members? $5 million? That's outrageous. No one could question him without being fired? That's outrageous. Smashing the off-site hard drives, then trying to steal money from the people. Plus, you know, you've already had $5 million. Trying to take an additional, $287,000 and transfer it out to Pakistan as you are leaving the country? Fleeing when they want to question you? Again, outrageous. Yesterday he was in court. He was charged with just the bank fraud part of it because they're just beginning an investigation. That is when Debbie Wasserman Schultz decided to fire him. Yesterday, after the hearing. Excuse me? What? Is it possible this guy was leaking information? Is it possible this is the leak? Is it possible there was blackmail going on? Is it possible this guy was taking confidential information and giving it to our enemies or just selling it for the highest price? Is it possible, forget about Islam, is it possible this guy was at all involved with Julian Assange and Putin? Is this where the DNC leak came from? Or any part of it? Was he involved? Strangely, the media doesn't have any questions. CBS yesterday reported on this for a whopping 37 seconds. This seems like a pretty big deal. Media, you want to know why nobody trusts you? Because you won't take on, quote, your own side, which you're not. Playing, you know, any kind of game to help at all. That's definitely not happening. 37 seconds for this? Why? The only thing that I can think of is that you're not in the bag for the DNC. You are so afraid of political correctness, and you think Americans are so bigoted and stupid that because this guy's was going to Pakistan and his name was Amanawan Pampadadam, that you just think we're going to round up Muslims and head to our local mosques. No. No. If there's anything that this makes me want to do, it makes me want to fumigate everything in the House and in the Senate. If corruption at this level was happening, what are the things that we don't know about? If this guy was compromising any of our House members or Senate, has he compromised any national security pieces? Have any votes gone down because he could use it, or because he was possibly feeding it to Debbie Wasserman Schultz? Don't you think some of those questions are important?
No, because the president tweeted his transgender ban yesterday. Oh, we got to cover that. I mean,
that's right.
We have to look at. He's banning transgender people in the military. Yeah. So,
by the way, he's got himself an attorney. He hired Chris Gowen, the founding partner of Gowen Rhodes, Winograd and Silva. I'm sure this is just a coincidence, but this is the guy that was a fact checker for President Clinton's memoir, My Life. He was a traveling aide for President Clinton on national and international trips. He finished his tenure with the Clintons for doing advance operations for Hillary Clinton during her 08. And now just part of the Clinton Global Initiative, the Clinton Foundation, and the Clinton Health Access Initiative. Something is very wrong.
Man.
And I don't think it's just going to stop at Debbie Wasserman Schultz if there was ever an honest. This would go to the Clintons. Something is very wrong here.
Sure sounds like it.
Let me just say one more.
Article 5. Attention, America. Article 5.
Get involved in art. These people, they're not going to clean this up. And if it's happening on one side, you can bet it's happening on the other side, too. The Democrats are not unique to corruption, Nixon. They are not unique. What is it that we don't know about? I'm on a one. Bum, bum.
I'm sure Hillary will talk about it a little bit in her new book coming out, her memoir entitled What Happened?
What Happened? The name of her book is What Happened?
What Happened?
That should sell tens of copies.
Oh, and it will. Last one did. She got an advance of $7 million for, remember?
Yeah.
It wound up selling, how much I don't did think, this even 100,000 copies.
How much, when the, how much did this one, how much did they give her in advance?
Oh, I'm sure a fortune. I mean, you know, look.
Right. It's in the millions.
But again, you got to ask yourself why.
It's got to sell some copies, though. I mean, this is her. Yeah. It's not her writing a book saying, like, here's the things that I will put into plan when I'm elected. It's her telling the backstory and the behind the scenes. And even though you're not going to get the real story, it's still going to sell some copies. These look backs always do. I mean, even when they're boring elections, the look backs sell some copies.
What happened?
What happened? I like that's a good name for the book. I don't know. Maybe you should have gone to a few of the states you lost. How about that? That may have been what happened.
Maybe you shouldn't have been so corrupt, you and your husband.
How about this? Don't be eternally awful.
Right? So learn how to give a speech in a likable way.
Well, there's three chapters.
Well, we almost have this thing written.
Some reports claim she received $14 million for hard choices.
$14 million.
I thought it was seven. It was double that.
I don't know. That's what some reports are saying in this story.
Wow.
This
$14 million. Jeez. Well, it is, Pat. It was seven after taxes. You know.
Oh, sure.
And
sure.
Especially right. with That's now true. The Republicans That's and true. With Steve Bannon, who wants to raise the raise taxes on millionaires. From 39% to 44%. Now, let me just tell you something. Do you think millionaires care? New money cares. Millionaires don't care. Zuckerberg doesn't care. Trump doesn't care. None of the people who actually have lots of money. New money does. New money does because they haven't.
I still think you care. I don't care if it's your money. You've earned it. It's 5% of $1 billion.
You will find a way.
Yes, you'll live.
Yeah, but you'll find a way around it. Mm-hmm. You'll just find a way around it. You'll get paid in other ways. It'll go to trust funds. You don't care. Yes, you do. but you'll find a way. That group will find a way to save hundreds of millions of dollars. I guarantee it. So it's nothing but a show. You don't take somebody who has a right to take 44% of your money. 44% of what you earn. And that's not including what they'll be paying in Social Security all the way. Doesn't mm-hmm. include what they're paying in other taxes, their state taxes. 44% in one tax to the federal government.
It's immoral.
Absolutely immoral. And if you ask people what is fair on the street and you tell them, hey, should they have to pay 44 and, you know, another 12? Should they have to pay, you know, 60% of their salary? Everybody says no. That's outrageous.
There was a great example of this yesterday with Deborah Messing, the actress, who saw the story of Steve Bannon wants a 44% tax on the wealthy. And she wrote, this is disgusting, because she, as an idiot, thought he was lowering the rate to 44%. Because she's a moron, she thought it was 44% and that was lowering it. She didn't realize it was raising it.
Oh, my gosh. All right, now this. I want to tell you about Antonio. Antonio got on to realestateagentsitrust.com, and within the week, he met his agent. That weekend, Antonio's agent had four visits lined up. On Tuesday, he had an offer for his home. You want to sell your home? Realestateagentsitrust.com. They're going to find a great real estate agent in your town. Worked for Antonio, will work for you. Over 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. They're bond. They look you in the eye. They give you a handshake. Their bond is their word. They're fully vetted and handpicked by my team for their knowledge, their skill, their track record, their decency. Thousands of families have already put Real Estate Agents I Trust to the test. The results have been remarkable. Just ask Antonio. Sold in one weekend. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. That's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
You know what America needs? Friction. They need the book Friction. Jeff Rosenblum is going to be joining us. He's the author, co-author of the book Friction. He was a founding partner in something called Questis. They work on brands. They American Express, Apple, Bloomberg, Capital One, Discovery Channel, Disney, ESPN, Ford, General Mills, Suzuki, Motorcycle. I mean, you name it, they've done it. And what we have in America is a passion brand, but that's really not what's we're adding all kinds of friction in using this passion brand. This is a book that was written for people who are managers, who are entrepreneurs, who are CEOs. I think it's one of the best books I have read in a very, very long time, because it proves it out just the way it's even written and its readability. It is a book you can't buy digitally, because you wouldn't get that point until you pick up this big, thick, heavy book that you're like, oh, geez, I got to read this. And then you find yourself, you know, 3 hours later, three quarters of the way through the book, and you're like, this is great. He's going to talk to us a little bit about the friction that is happening because the world is changing so rapidly. And if you are somebody that wants to change the world, whether it is in your company or in your family or in the country, you need to listen to the next interview that is coming up. Jeff Rosenblum is in the green room now. Passion Brands in the Age of Disruption. Friction is the name of the book.
We have a quick update on the news of the day.
Yeah.
You may be interested in Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman tells military there will be no transgender policy modification until specific direction from the president. So the tweet basically at this point means nothing. They have not informed the military of any of it, and there's nothing changing as of this moment.
He did it because he needed to win a vote yesterday in the House. That's all this was about yesterday, was trying to win a vote in the House. And it caused an awful lot of chaos in the Pentagon. And And the media was just chasing their tails yesterday.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
The whole world is changing, and really in an exciting and dynamic way, if you understand that the bullcrap of yesterday, which Washington hasn't figured out yet, the bullcrap of yesterday, the lies of yesterday, and the systems that create friction and make your life complicated just don't work anymore. Nobody wants them. Don't prop them up. Get out of that and find passion. Passion brands and friction. We're going to talk about that with a guy who knows it quite well, beginning right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Name of the book that I've been telling you about for weeks, and I'm thrilled to be able to have Jeff Rosenblum. He is one of the co-authors of the book Friction, Passion Brands in the Age of Disruption. It is one of those books that you read and you're like, geez, why? How could I not know that? How did I not think that? How is this all of a sudden? It's one of those things that somebody invents something, and you're like, of course, how come I didn't invent that? I want you to know that Jeff is not here to sell books. I highly recommend you buy his book, but he's not taking any of the money from it. It's actually going to something called Special Spectators, which we hope to talk about a little bit later. He will also be with us on the Blaze TV for a special episode tonight at 5 o'clock. So he's not here to make any money. He's here to change some lives. And you have dramatically impacted my thinking since I picked up your book. So it's great to have you here, Jeff.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So tell me, I guess we just need to start at, the brands of the past and the brands now. Passion brands. What is it?
Well, passion brands are the brands that absolutely dominate the competition, right? They don't just have customers. They have an army of evangelists. These are the folks who are at the bars, at the restaurants, at the dinner table. They sit around the campfire. They're up on their social media channels. They've got the T-shirts. They've got the hats. They're like walking billboards. And they're actively proselytizing for brands.
So you talk about one passion brand that really has boggled my mind until I read your book. But I want to ask you some questions about it. And that is Yeti.
Yeah.
Coolers. Great coolers. Great coolers.
The best.
But what is it? 4 times the price of a good cooler?
Yeah.
And I've often wondered, people who buy this, they become evangelists, and it's a cooler. And I wonder how much of that is because it truly is absolutely great, and how much of that is to soothe the cognitive dissonance in their head of, I just paid 4 times as much, and everybody who doesn't have one says, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Does that play a role in that at all?
Well, absolutely. The answer is both. So to dial it back, and then we'll talk about Yeti, passion brands are built by fighting friction. Friction is anything that gets in the way of what you want to accomplish in life. It's anything that gets in the way of your hopes, your dreams, your aspirations, or even your mundane day-to-day goals. So when you think about Yeti, it's a cooler for the outdoors. So by definition, if you're using it, you're going on some sort of outdoor adventure. So they fight friction in 2 ways. The first is, this cooler is fundamentally better than any other cooler out there. It's literally certified grizzly bear proof. Right? Now, the chances of anyone actually needing that type of technology?
Right.
Fairly negligible.
Right. I'd like a cooler that I could pick up and throw at the grizzly bear.
Mark it down, Yeti. That's right. The next product. But it's nice to know, if you're going on that adventure, that product that you're buying can go further and deeper and bigger on an adventure.
Right.
But to your point, it's not just about the cooler. It's about the totality of the experience. And what they've done that I love is rather than relying on a bunch of interruptive ads, they've created these incredible videos. Each of these videos are about 8 minutes long, and there are dozens of them, and they've been watched millions of times over. And what they do is they tell these stories about people who are going on bigger and bolder adventures than most people ever will. The world's greatest fly fisherman, the world's greatest ski guide, the world's greatest barbecue pit master, who happens to be an 89-year-old woman named Tootsie. These are great stories. And they're not products about, like, we're Yeti, and these are great coolers. Like, Yeti doesn't even appear, really, in these videos. But what happens is they give us a vision, a bigger and bolder vision of ourselves, right? We all wake up in the morning wanting to be better than we were the day before. It's at the heart of the human experience. It's what drives capitalism. So these great videos help us envision that. And by the way, I've watched hours of them. Most people will watch a few of them. The typical interactive ad experience is 1.6 seconds. Compare that to an 8-minute video.
I watched the fly fishing one.
Yeah.
It's 22 minutes.
Yeah.
I watched it.
Every second of it.
Yeah. And I don't watch. Here's what I do. And I hear from the guys, because I'm not a sports guy, but I hear from the guys on sports. Every Monday, I hear, oh, and I know they're on ESPN trying to just get the 6-second clip and they have to sit through the commercial.
Yes.
That's not 22 minutes.
It's agonizing. Yes.
And that's just in the way of getting to their 6 seconds.
Yeah. Pre-rolls. They're, you know, the advertising industry, we keep making ads and the audience keeps running away. Now, to be clear, this is not about the death of advertising. That false eulogy has been written before. Yeah. We're just asking advertising to do too much. We can still do incredible things with advertising, but increasingly those traditional interruptive ads are being ignored and avoided.
In fact, just removing the friction from your product will do more than any ad. If you make a truly great product and you make it frictionless, and not only, I mean, let's go into the passion brands a little bit, of finding that group of people. And let me ask you, do you need to really have an authentic brand? Does that need to come from the founders that are like, you know what? I wanted this. I know this is great. And I don't care if anybody buys it. Or does it come from a group of people who are just scanning the horizon and saying, yeah, those people over there, let's come up with something for there. Or does it matter?
Well, I think it comes from both. But most passion brands that we see, and they can be big brands like Under Armour, they can be big brands like Amazon, or some of them are smaller startups, they tend to be run by the founders because they have a strong vision and they don't want to waver from that vision. But it can be from large established corporations. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things that we found is that really the key is to take all your effort and instead of first focusing it outward at messaging, focus it inward at your own behaviors. And a piece of research we found is what's called the Power Score. And they looked at 9 million different data points. They interviewed 20 self-made billionaires and CEOs and army generals and insurgents. What they found is only 1% of leaders are great at what they call the power score, which is establishing your priorities, staffing effectively, and building internal communication cadence. So if you can have great leadership, then you can build a great passion brand. And ironically, you can create great ads. But you have to focus inward before outward.
Some amazing things that I just didn't know. For instance, some stats in your book. Let me just run through a few of them. 90% of all of the data in the world has been collected in the last 2 years. That's astounding. 40 minutes in nature every week will lower ADHD by 50%. Don't put your smartphone or your iPad next to your bed. Take that on.
That, it's interesting because so many people loved it and we weren't sure if that actually fits in the book. But what we tried to do with the book is look at industrial friction, organizational friction, and personal friction. And in that example, we found this great story about Keith Richards, world's greatest guitar player, or one of them. And one night, he's out doing the one thing that he does in this world better than play guitar. He's partying like a rock star. And he passes out cold, and he wakes up the next day, and he's got a song in his head. And his guitar is literally lying in bed lovingly with him. He grabs guitar, rolls over, presses record on his tape recorder, lays down a few notes, passes out cold again. Wakes up a couple hours later, presses play, and he finds the guitar riff for Satisfaction is waiting for him. Of course, and it's followed by the sound of him snoring. He's not even conscious enough to press stop on the recorder. Paul McCartney had a similar experience. He woke up one day and he's got a song, Scrambled Eggs, in his head. Can't stop with his song, Scrambled Eggs. He's turning to all his bandmates, turning to all his friends. He's like, what song have I ripped off here? And they're like, dude, you didn't. It's your song. It's Scrambled Eggs. It's your original. And thankfully, he went to John Lennon. He turned it from Scrambled Eggs to Yesterday.
Scrambled Eggs. Amazing.
Not quite as catchy when you're talking about breakfast food, right?
Right.
So, and it didn't only happen to rock stars. The guy who figured out the periodic table of the elements, the guy who figured out the double helix with DNA, all of this happened first thing in the morning when people woke up. And what happens is, in your brain, you've got something called alpha waves. It's the most powerful form of cognitive creativity that you have. This is where you can think of some big, bold breakthrough ideas. It's the same thing that you get if you're in a hot shower, a hot bath, you're in traffic for a while, your alpha waves kick in. You start ignoring all that crap that's in your head. Now, the issue is, to your point, 72% of us go to bed with our cell phone lying next to us. 50% of us, the very first thing that we do is we check it. One third of women, before they even go to the bathroom, they check social media. The problem is, when you do that, you completely shut off those alpha waves. You lose that opportunity to have that cognitive creativity.
And why is that?
Because it kicks in your fight or flight system, which is something we learned about in high school, right? It's when the blood flow changes. It used to be something that kept us from getting eaten by woolly mammoths. Now it's the type of thing that keeps us getting run over by a car, right? Your subconscious takes over, your brain pivots, you get different chemicals like adrenaline and cortisol in there. And that's what happens with your cell phone, because there's stress in there. Your buddy on Facebook who just went on a better vacation than you'll ever go on, that's stressful, right? The server that's on fire, the contract that didn't get signed, whatever it is on email, that's all stress. So you're turning off that creativity and you're creating stress. Now, here's the interesting point. They used to think that your brain was your brain and that's all you got. It turns out that there's a high degree of plasticity in your brain, which means it can change. Just like that cheap analogy that says your brain is like a muscle, you gotta work it, turns out it's true. You can actually change the size and shape of certain areas of your brain, and it happens very quickly. So when you go to your mobile device first thing in the morning, you turn off the creativity, you turn on the fight or flight, for the rest of the day, you're not gonna be as creative. So with the 90 million bits of information, 90% of the data that's been collected in the past 2 years, everybody has unprecedented access to data and technology. Creativity is the ultimate competitive advantage, and you have to feed your creativity just like you have to work out your body at the gym.
When we come back, I want you to talk about
We know all about the gym, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah. You're talking to a good crew on that analogy.
That's why I went there.
You're speaking our language. When we come back, I want you to talk about monkeys. And how this relates to monkeys and then back to us in just a second. First, let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour is American Financing. Here's the thing. So many people, when they talk about buying a new house, they will say things like, oh, we find out if the bank's going to give us the loan. Give you the loan? They're not giving you the loan. They're selling you the loan. But the entire system has been set up to feel like you're going in and they're going to give you the loan. You're paying an extraordinary large amount of money for that loan. Let me flip this. American Financing, they do not take kickbacks from the banks, because the banks have these, they're called instruments, loans, and they want certain loans to be sold to people, not given to you, sold to people, so they can make the maximum amount of money. And so what the banks have, usually, in all of the different kinds of lenders, is somebody that is on a commission. You sell the loan that bank is trying to push, you're going to get extra commission, so you make more money. The first thing that American Financing did when they set themselves up was get rid of all commissions. They don't work for the banks or any of their partners for lending. They work for you. So when you go in to get a loan, you're going to find the loan that is right for you. Reverse mortgages now are also available. Do your own homework on reverse mortgages, but call 800-906-2440, 1-800-906-2440, or you can go to AmericanFinancing.net. These people are looking out for you. AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. 888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
A game-changing book in your thinking is Friction, Passion Brands in the Age of Disruption. There is so much friction in our lives, from chaos, from the news, just trying to understand the political, it's all friction. And being able to reduce that and navigate through that is really hard. And I think people are getting really frustrated in some ways with life, and they're just tuning out. They're just stopping. And that's really because the media or the politicians or the parties or whatever you're dealing with just are not changing. They're holding on to the old system.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. I was blown away. Where'd you get the monkey thing, and then explain the monkey thing?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was writing the book, we set up a research team. I read literally tens of thousands of data points, thousands of pages of research, and I'm a complete numbnut. I barely graduated college, right? But I'm hanging out with my really smart friend. He's a PhD at Stanford. He's a neuroscientist, and he's telling me about this study that they conduct all the time. And what happens is, when you go to get your PhD, they often give you this experiment where they take an electric probe and they put it into a monkey's brain to read what's going on inside that brain. And then what they do is they play this loud, blaring, obnoxious sound in the monkey's ear. And what you see on the readout is not surprising. When you play that awful sound, you get a very strong and very negative reaction from the monkey's brain. So then they repeat the experiment. They play that loud, blaring, obnoxious sound. And what you find, again, is not surprising. They have a very strong and very negative reaction. But what it was absolutely shocking to me is that if you repeat the experiment a few times over, and then you look at the readout, the reaction looks like the side of a cliff. The monkey's brain literally stops reacting to this awful sound because the monkey, at a structural level, knows that it needs to focus on other things in life: food, water, shelter, fornication, right? If it continues to respond so strongly to that stimulus, it literally can't survive. It's called repetition suppression.
So are we in, before we go into this on the decisions that we make in every day, but are we seeing this? Is this one of the reasons why we are just tuning so many things out in Washington? We're tuning principles out. We're tuning all kinds of stuff out because we just can't do anything about it. And we keep hearing it shouted over and over and over and over again. And we have to focus on other things. Or am I reading that right?
That's exactly right. Okay. The human brain is exposed to 400 billion bits of information every second. We make 35,000 conscious decisions per day. We ran an experiment.
So wait, that's 35,000 yes or no decisions?
Yeah. It could be more complicated than yes or no. These are outright conscious decisions.
That is crazy.
Per day, right? So brands, politicians, we're all trying to enter this stream. We expose people to 5,000 branded messages per day. The previous generation was only 2,000. Already that was too much. So what we have to do is focus less on interruptions and more on empowerment. Or another way of looking at it is magnets over megaphones. We have to create content and experiences that are so powerful, people go out of their way to participate in them and then share them with others. And that's the secret ingredient to brands like Yeti.
Patagonia, you think, is the pinnacle of a passion brand?
Patagonia is one of them.
Why?
Well, I fell in love with those guys because, first of all, they recognize that there's friction in the category. And what they do is they focus all of their efforts on fighting that friction. So the friction is this. If you want to enjoy their outdoor gear and apparel, you need a healthy outdoors. And ironically, when they create their products, it actually damages the outdoors, right? They create manufacturing byproducts. Your old jacket makes garbage, right? So everything that they do, they fight friction by empowering people.
Okay, so when we come back, listen to the ad campaign that they came up with. And it's brilliant, brilliant. Patagonia Friction is the name of the book. Jeff Rosenblum joins us in just a few minutes. Friction, passion brands in the age of disruption. Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I will tell you, if you really want to see the world in a different way, especially if you're an entrepreneur or a leader of any sort, you really want to see the future and whether what you're doing will survive or not, you need to read the book Friction, Passion Brands in the Age of Disruption. Jeff Rosenblum is with us. And you were giving us the example of Patagonia. Patagonia making outdoor clothing, and they really are dedicated to, you know, save the planet and everything else. And so that's where their people are. And the friction that they had internally was, you know, all of the stuff that we make, the chemicals and everything, the garbage, that's actually hurting. So how are we helping exactly? So talk about the campaign that they ran with a coat.
Yep. So you hit on a really important point. For their target audience, making the environment healthier is absolutely paramount. Right? So the campaign that I love, I came across not when I was doing research, but we actually created this documentary called The Naked Brand. And we looked at one of their campaigns called The Footprint Chronicles, where it was like, you know, if you got those surfer board shorts and you go surfing and you come back on the beach and they dry like 45 seconds later? Well, guess what? Mother Nature didn't make those shorts. We made them. We manufactured them. They're manufacturing byproducts. So you can actually follow the manufacturing of their products around the globe, see the supply chain. And they're not saying, hey, look how great we are. They're literally talking about the damage they do. It's really counterintuitive. I found it fascinating, and I fell in love with the brand. And I wanted to buy this blue Patagonia jacket. I had a perfect vision of it in my mind's eye. And I'm literally shopping on Black Friday. It's the number one shopping day of the year. Brands sell more on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, than in months combined. And I type in Patagonia.com, and on the homepage, like they read my mind, I can't exaggerate this, is the blue jacket that I wanted to buy. And then right next to it, on the homepage, in a giant font, don't buy this jacket. What the heck is going on here? And then there's a button, like direct response principles. Click on it, learn more. So I click. And their point is this: reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce is number one. So if you want to buy that jacket, we're happy to sell it to you. But we're going to damage the environment from the manufacturing, from the garbage you rolled jacket. Maybe you don't need that jacket. Maybe you should buy less. So, I'm Jewish. I'm from New York. I felt guilty. I didn't buy the jacket. Right? They lost the sale. But here's what they gained. Wow. They gained my unwavering loyalty. And they gained my evangelism. So here we are on your show talking about Patagonia. But, you know, more influential than me are the people who are truly influential, the guides, right? These are the guys who are leading hiking and biking in fly fishing, in surfing adventures all around the world. And by definition, guides are influential, and they're covered from head to toe in Patagonia gear because Patagonia is empathetic and empowers people about the one thing that is most important to those guides. And when you talk about evangelists, they are 12 times or more trusted than paid advertising ever will be.
Wow. Mm. And also their competition is similar in that way, right? They try to reduce North Face. they reduce friction for their customers as well.
Yeah, it's a great point. Thanks for bringing it up, because we can't just all jump on the environmental bandwagon. We can't jump on what other brands are already doing.
That would look really disingenuous.
Totally disingenuous, right? People don't wake up in the morning wanting brands to, like, hug the trees and save the manatees, right?
Right.
It works for some brands. Mm-hmm. North Face took a different tact, which is, if you want to enjoy outdoor sports and apparel, we're going to help you become a better athlete. So they created what they call the Mountain Series, right? And it's a bunch of instructional videos and information and articles and events that help people become better athletes. So I fell in love with this video series. It was from some of the best rock climbers and the best skiers, and they were showing very specific exercises to help me become a better skier. What's interesting was, I don't think it worked all that well for them, because they made less of those videos. It became less prominent. But they stick to this platform. They're always empowering, and they're always educating with different events and different information to help people become better athletes. You don't see the ads, or you do see the ads that say, hey, we're North Face, these are great products. But more importantly, they create content and experiences. So the ads are only part of that brand building system. It's not the totality of it.
You go through a lot of this stuff, obviously, in the book, Friction. I have a friend who goes to Soul Cycle,
yes,
which is a cycling, you know, spinning class place.
Bordering on a cult.
Yes. Number one thing people say to her is, shut up about Soul Cycle.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like the number one thing that happens.
It's like Orange Theory.
Orange
Theory is like, okay, stop with the bumper stickers. It's a gym, man. Yeah, right. Let it go.
Yeah. And so the question I want to ask you is, how do I get her to shut up about Soul Cycle? But separately, how? Because I look at their business model.
Yep.
And I see a huge friction point, which is they're charging people $31 to come in and ride a bike in their establishment for an hour.
Yes.
And to me, that sounds completely insane.
Yes.
Yet they have more evangelists percentage-wise probably than any company I've ever seen. How do you cross over a huge friction point like that and bring your audience along?
Great point. Great brand. I should have included them in the book. I actually thought about those guys a lot. I was scared out of my mind to actually go in there. I don't want to have to sweat that hard. I was like, I'll fight another brand. You guys selling salad? We'll do that.
There's a bed brand.
Salad. Really like. I like the part on Cadbury, for the love of God.
Right. Salad. The chocolate brand was also a lot easier than Soul Cycle.
That was a good one.
Right. Here's the interesting point that you just mentioned is these passion brands, they don't get there by talking about discounts and promotions. And once brands go there, it becomes really addictive. They actually charge a premium price. Patagonia, Yeti, SoulCycle, mm-hmm. Sweetgreen, all of this stuff is quite a bit more expensive than the competition.
And it has to be worth it first. It has to be worth, if you're buying a dozen eggs, you better get 14. And great farm fresh eggs if you're charging.
Or at least you're better than whatever else.
Yeah, have to be that first. There's none of this, you know, hey, Fred Flintstone saying that, you know, doctors say smoking is healthy. It's got to actually be accurate, right?
There's a great poster I saw. No amount of advertising can get me to buy your crappy pizza, right?
Yes.
And the truth of the matter is, it actually can. It can get you to buy that crappy pizza
once.
But it's not going to get loyalty,
correct,
and it's not going to get evangelism.
Correct.
So you're hitting on a key point, which you made with Yeti, which is product has to be better than the competition.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be 2 or 3 times better,
right,
but it has to be 10, 20, 30, 40% better, right? But to your point, that relationship that people have with SoulCycle is irrational, right?
Yes.
So
yeah, I can confirm that. Yes.
The reason that it's irrational is that it's emotional. Most brands have a transactional relationship, right? They make a good product, they charge a fair price, they have some pretty good advertising, people comparison shop, and then they buy.
Mm-hmm.
SoulCycle and other brands have an emotional relationship where people pay more for the product. They ignore the competition. They buy all that SoulCycle and other their gear, and they turn themselves into walking billboards. And they do that, they create that irrational relationship through irrational behavior. Think about that Patagonia example. Running a campaign that says, don't buy this jacket,
mm-hmm.
that's irrational.
So Starbucks really was kind of a pioneer in this kind of area, weren't they? Where everybody was going to Dunkin' Donuts, you're getting your coffee at a normal price, and then all of a sudden, whew, here comes Starbucks charging money out the nose. But it became more than a coffee place.
Yeah. Well, it went from transactional I like Dunkin' Donuts. I'm from the Northeast. It's great. Great cup of coffee. Yeah. But it's transactional. You're in, you're out, you move on.
Correct.
Howard Schultz was like, wait a second. Let's make this experiential. Let's look at what's going on in Europe. Let's sell them the cup of coffee and then give them a place to hang out. And then all of a sudden, almost like SoulCycle, it's almost cultish in the language that people are using when they're ordering from SoulCycle, but they're becoming part of a tribe. And tribes are extraordinarily powerful. We don't just want customers. Customers are fine if you want to be a good product. But if you want to be a passion brand, you have to build a tribe.
So is that why they use things like venti? They change the language to make it even more of a badge to be a part of this tribe? Is that what's going on?
That's exactly right. Right? And I don't know. Like, I'm not that gifted creatively to figure those types of things out. But yeah, Howard or somebody on his team figured out long ago, let's create that badge. Let's create those shortcuts.
The name of the book is Friction. I can't recommend it highly enough. I've never done this with any book before. I insisted everybody on the staff read this book. So we're responsible for about 249 copies being sold.
Thank you very much.
And everybody has read it. I also, for the first time I've never done this, we're asking all of our Dallas employees to come down to the studio floor today. There's about 90 here just in this building. They're coming to listen to you at 5 o'clock for the show at 5 today on theblaze.com. And I just want you to talk about how to find the customer, how to reduce friction, how to... I mean, I'm convinced everything in your book, I've known instinctively. And if I boil it down, I've always thought that capitalism was the greatest charity brand ever, if it's done right. Mm-hmm. And meaning, if I love a group of people, and I'll say, how can I serve them? How can I make their life better, easier? And by serving them what they need in a really easy way, I could become rich. It is capitalism. It's not charity, it's capitalism. And that's really kind of the thing. If you know who your target is, you know who you're serving, and you actually love them, listen to them, and help make their life easier, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you bring it up, because I'm leaving this very blue region of New York City, and I'm heading to this very red region of Texas. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking out the window at this wonderful, amazing, beautiful country of ours. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about the fact that we just can't seem to agree very much lately. And then I realized, wait a second, there is one thing that we can all agree upon, which is corporations have incredible power. And they should use that power to improve people's lives, one small step at a time. And this is not for altruistic reasons. This is not for idealistic reasons, because that type of motivation is not sustainable. It's because when brands improve people's lives, they get rewarded. Not just by shifting customers, or say prospects to customers, but by shifting customers into evangelists, where people will pay more and people will evangelize. And that's what fighting friction is all about.
Unless you go to the Wharton School of Business or Harvard School of Business, and you are assigned both Wealth of Nations and Moral Sentiments, which is imperative that you read both Adam Smith books, You're not gonna get this. This is a new, really kind of Adam Smith look at how capitalism should work. Friction, passion brands in the age of disruption. Jeff Rosenblum, we will see you on the Blaze TV today at 5. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to talk real quick before you go. The proceeds, as we're telling people to buy your book, the proceeds are not going to you.
Middle of it, and from July 15th to August 15th, all of the proceeds, every penny we make, not Amazon, not the publisher, I can't control those guys, goes to Special Spectators.
And which is what?
Special Spectators takes kids with life-threatening illnesses and takes them to exclusive college sports experiences. So they'll get on the field at like Alabama, and they'll get into the locker room, and they'll meet the coaches, and there's all different games going around the country. And what they found with these guys, because I'm on the board of Make-A-Wish and we saw it there also, is it's not just about giving these guys this sort of moment of happiness, but it's also part of the healing process, right? It literally heals kids when they're fighting these diseases to actually have a moment of happiness in their life.
Thank you very much, Jeff. We'll talk to you later this afternoon.
Thank you.
By the way, if you have any questions, go ahead and tweet them, and I'll have the staff look at them this afternoon before we go on the air. You can just tweet them at Glenn Beck, and we'll try to get your questions in as well. Now this, the Fed says it's ready to start slowly shrinking its holdings of more than $4 trillion in bonds. Now, what does this mean? The Fed is going to start shrinking its holdings. So in other words, they're going to get rid of some of the things that they bought up to be able to print money. This could begin as soon as September. These are the bonds the Fed bought in their attempt to stabilize the economy. So if they have good stuff and they're selling it and they've got $4 trillion of it, that would mean that the bond prices would go down because somebody is wanting to sell $4 trillion of bond. Unfortunately, what this also means is there's a lot of crap that the Fed bought. They just bundled up all of this crap from the banks that the banks wanted to get rid of. They got to sell that stuff too. Who's buying, and what does this do to the asset bubble that is sitting out here? I want you to read an exclusive report from President Reagan's budget director, David Stockman. He's written this report for Goldline, identifying the five threats to the economy. Things, you know, civilization and the economy both really being pushed every single day, and they're very fragile. Read this report. Get it for free by calling 866-465-3546. 866-465-3546. Don't buy anything until you've done all of your own homework. The best thing you can do to be prepared is to actually have knowledge first. Call 866-465-3546. Read their important risk information. Find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. 866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah. He is... Jeff Rosenblum has a lot to teach. I had dinner with him last night. There's a lot of meat on the bone. It's all real common sense. But if you're a manager, a CEO, an entrepreneur wannabe, a guy who just wants to make your job better at McDonald's, doesn't matter. The name of the book is Friction, and he will be joining me for another hour tonight on the Blaze TV at 5 p.m. Eastern.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.